Wednesday, 16th of December, Koftes Kislev, Rabbi Yehuda Landi, Historical Sources of the Hashmonaim Period.
Okay, good morning everyone, and happy Hanukkah. As mentioned, we're going to talk about the historical sources of the Hashmonaim. We have our sources, the story of Hanukkah, everyone knows. The Gemara Shabbos, Daf Chavav, beginning of second parak, that talks about my Hanukkah, and there's a quote, Shenichasi Yivonim Lahechol, when the Yivonim entered the Hechol, they were Matame, all the oil, and when the Hashmonaim came in, Venitzchom, they only found a jar of oil that was Munach V'chos Moshekei and Gadol, was enough for one day, and it lasted for 8 days. Okay. There are a lot more other sources on Hanukkah. Some of them come from what's known as Svarim Chitzonim, from out of Svarim which didn't make it into Tanakh. Most notably are the Book of the Maccabees 1 and the Book of the Maccabees 2. These are two books that were written probably shortly after the death of the last of the Maccabee brothers. There were five brothers, and the death of the last one, Shimon, probably that's when the book was written, because it doesn't continue on to his descendants afterwards. So that's another source. The source which the Gemara brings is a source from what's known as Megillas Tainis. The Gemara in Shabbos says that Megillas Tainis was written towards the end of Bayit Sheni, a collection of days that were Yomim Tovim LeYisrael, that were declared holidays, that were declared Yomim Tovim LeYisrael, and the Megillas Tainis is a bunch of days, and in Maseches Tainis we have days Shalom HaMispah, days you're not allowed to fast, and some Amochomer were also, you're not allowed to do a Hespet. So there's a bunch of all these days in Megillas Tainis, but which a lot of them have to do with the Hashmonai victories. As we'll see, we'll mention one of them. A lot of them have to do with the Hashmonai victories. But these days, the Maskara of the Gemara in Maseches Rosh Hashanah is Batla Megillas Tainis. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, all these days which were holidays, all these days which are Yom Tovim, Batla Megillas Tainis, they are no longer relevant. And no longer Nogala Maisa. Interestingly, we can bring one day which has to do with the Hashmonaim, and that's Yom Nikonar, which is mentioned in the Gemara in Tainis in the second parak. Who was Nikonar? Nikonar was a Greek general, and he, the whole time, the Gemara says, he was waving his finger on Yerushalayim and saying, when is the day going to come when I'm going to capture Yerushalayim? And that time, the Hashmonaim went out, and they killed him, and they cut off his hand, and they hanged it from the walls of Yerushalayim, and they said the mouth that was speaking with such gaiva against the Ribono Shel Olam in the hand, they'll be hanging here as a sign of the victory. And they made that day Yom Tov, and that day was none other than Yud Gimel Adar. And Yud Gimel Adar today is what? Tanis Esther. So what more example do we have than that? That we fast, actually, on a day that's listed in Megillas Tainis. So no problem, because the Maskara de Gemara is, Ve'ilchus Abatla Megillas Tainis, Gemara Rosh Hashanah, in the first parak. But Megillas Tainis is Batel, and these days are no longer relevant. But the Gemara goes on and says the next line, Ve'ilchus Alei Batla Megillas Tainis. The Alochus Megillas Tainis is not Batel, remains in effect. So the Gemara says, Kashe Ilchusa Ilchusa, make up your mind. Batel Megillas Tainis or not. So the Gemara says, like Asher, Hava Hanukkah Purim, Hava Shar Yomi, that all the days of Megillas Tainis are batel, any relevant, and you're allowed to fast, and you're allowed to be maspid. The only two exceptions to this rule are Hanukkah and Purim. Hanukkah and Purim are also a pair of Megillas Tainis, and they are the exceptions to the rule, but every other day is batel Megillas Tainis. But we'll try to explain what the difference is between these. We know that from the Book of the Maccabees, that the Maccabee family comes from the city of Modi'in. Modi'in is mentioned in the Mishnah in Maseches Pesachim, in the ninth parak. The Gemara says that if a person is traveling to Yerushalayim on Erev Pesach, and then it's Erev Pesach afternoon, he sees traffic is pretty backed up, and he's going to have to get to Yerushalayim to Mimakav Korban Pesach. So the din is, if a person is a Derech HaChayka, if he's far away, So then he's parted from Pesach Rishon, he can push it off to Pesach Sheni. But if it's too close, then he's got to continue to make his way to Yerushalayim despite the traffic. He can run ahead with the carbon and shechted. Everyone else will make it by the end of the day. That's fine. So the Gemara says that min amardim v'lachutz, what's the derech l'chayka? If he's beyond Modin, if he's on his way to Yerushalayim, he's outside, he didn't pass Modin yet, so then he's got to... then he's there chayko, and he can push it off to Pesach Sheni. But if he's already past Modin, then he's already close, and he has no choice but to continue to Yerushalayim. So today, if you've been to Eretz Yisrael, which I'm sure most of you have, there's two major roads leading up from the coastal plain to Yerushalayim. This is the main highway, road number one, and there is another road a little farther north called 443. Now, the roads in Eretz Yisrael today, most of them run along the same route as they did a couple thousand years ago, because these are passageways through the mountains, and you can't exactly, you can fix them up a little, make them straighter, but the bottom line is these roads go along the same routes that they were. So road number one, there was an ancient road there from the times of the Romans and the time of the Mishnah, but it was a secondary road that went up to Yerushalayim. Road 443, that was the main road to Yerushalayim. From Yafo to Yerushalayim, that was the main road, 443. And it runs right smack past the city, the modern city of Modin today. And next to it is, nearby, there's an Arab village called El Medya, which probably identifies the name of the ancient Modin. Now, in Chazal, we don't have reference to this that the family came there, but there is one mention. And the mention is in the Gemara in Kiddushin, Dab Samach Vav Amud Aleph. The Gemara says that Tanya, Ma'aseh b'Yana HaMelech Sholach L'Kochlis Shebamidbar. Yana HaMelech went to Kochlis in the Midbar, that's a place. We're going to try to identify the general location. V'kibesh Am Shishim Krochim. And he captured over there 60 towns. Now Yana was one of the kings of the Hashmonaim, that's beyond doubt. And he made a big celebration to commemorate his victory over the 60 towns. And the Gemara says, there was a person over there who was a late slave, Eliezer ben Poira, and he told Yana, he says, Limum shal Prushim alecha. As you know, by Sheni, you had the Prushim, you had the Tzedukim, and he said, Limum shal Prushim alecha. They don't really mean to honor you. So he says, how can I test them? He says, Hakem lem betzitz shebein enecho. Take the tzitz and put it on your forehead and see how they react to that. The tzitz was one of the begadim of the Kohen Gadol. Why particularly the tzitz? So Rashi and Tosis is where they discuss. Tosis says, even though you're not allowed to have the kahuna outside the Beis HaMikdash, the tzitz is an exception to the rule. Why? Because the Pasuk says, V'haya al mitzchot tamid, the ratzon l'mifnei Hashem, the tzitz should be on the forehead always. So that this is an exception which Yana could have worn even though he wasn't doing the avodah. Like this is a big de kahuna or hektish. You can't just wear it for yourself. So Rashi says, okay, you don't have to take them off right away. But Tosfos says, yeah, that's true. We can't just put them on for no reason. So Tosfos says that the tzitz was, the Kohen Gadol was allowed to wear the whole time. So when they put that on, so there was he put on the tzitz, and there was an elderly person, he'd have been Gditya, and he said to Yana Melech, Rav Loch Keser Malchus, it's enough that you are a king, Hanach Keser Kuhuna L'Zar Shel Aaron, leave the Keser Kuhuna, the Kohen Gadol, leave that for Zar Shel Aaron. What's the problem? The Chashmonai Mor Kohanim, who say, B'memet Tishel Ben Yochum and Kohen Gadol, so what is the problem with that? So the Gemara says, Shayu Omrim Imo Nishbeis B'modim, they said that his mother was taken captive in the city of Modin. And the din is that if a woman is taken captive, so then she's no longer allowed to marry a Kohen. So if she was taken captive by a guy. So Yana, of course, was upset, and he killed out the Chachamim. The whole thing resulted from that. But what we see from here is that it mentions the town of Modin, which is the location of where the Chashmonaim came from. There were five brothers of the Chashmonaim. We know that the Rambam mentions in the beginning of Hilchos Chanukah, the Rambam mentions Rabbi Sheni, Kishemolcho Yavon, Rambam, in Hilchos Chanukah, Bergim Alecha Aleph, Rabbi Sheni, Kishemolcho Yavon, when the Greeks ruled, goes of Gzeros al Yisrael. They were goes of Gzeros against Klal Yisrael, Uvit Ludasam, and the Mavatel. They prevented them from keeping the mitzvahs. V'lo yinichu osam lasek b'torah b'mitzvahs. The Rambam lists the whole thing, the whole things that the Greeks did to our forefathers, and then he says, and he rescued them. The sons of the Hashmonai, the Kohen Gadolim, were victorious. They killed them. And they rescued Klal Yisrael from the Greeks. They appointed a king from the Kohanim. And Malchus was restored to Klal Yisrael for more than 200 years. And the Churban Hasheni, until the destruction of Bayi Sheni, there was Malchus Yisrael. That's what the Rambam says. Now, there's a lot to discuss about this, which we won't, like the status Malach Min HaKohanim, which is clearly against the Halacha. A king can only be from Malchus Beis David. You can't appoint from the Kohanim. Particularly, the Yerushalmi says, it says, who of one of the Kohanim Yisrael, the Parsha of Malchus, in Parsha Shoftim, it says, who of one of the Kohanim Yisrael? And the next pasuk says, "Lo yeh laKohanim Alvim Kol Shei Mitleim B'Chelik V'Nachlaim Mechov." So the Shalom is Doresh that Malchus yes, but Lo yeh laKohanim. A Kohen cannot be a Melech. So a Kohen Zah cannot be a Melech. And of course, once it was a Malchus Beis David, you can't appoint someone as a Melech not from Beis David. That's an issue in itself. We'll talk over here about the chronological issue in the time and this Malchus. And by the way, the Hashmonaim, first of all, the Rambam says more than 200 years. Now, where did the Rambam get this from? It's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, if you find it, not we'll have the quarter bump there. Okay. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, here we are. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that Malchus Paras Bifnei Abayis 34 years. The Bayi Sheni stood for 420 years total. Malchus Paras, the Persian Empire, was for 34 years. That's an issue way beyond the scope of the discrepancy in the years, 34 years versus the other historical chronology, the non-Jewish chronology, but we're not going into that today at all. Then, Malchus Yavon of the Abayis Me'er Shmonim Shana. The Greeks controlled Eretz Yisrael and Yerushalayim 480 years out of those 420. Malchus Beis Chashmonai b'fnei Abayis me'el shlosh v'shalosh. The Malchus Beis Chashmonai dynasty was for 103 years, and Malchus Beis Hurdus me'el shlosh, and the Malchus of Hurdus, Herat, was another 103 years, and then that comes up to a total of 420 years. So the Rambam from here clearly takes that at the result of the Malchus Beis Chashmonai and Hardus is 206 years total. So that tells you that the Malchus returned to Klal Yisrael for more than 200 years. This is the base for the Rambam. There's no doubt about that. How the Rambam considers this Malchus Yisrael, especially Malchus Hardus, as I said, there's a lot to talk about. But that's how the Rambam interprets this. He calls this Malchus Yisrael. Okay, if we try to backtrack a little, we know the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed around the year 70 Liminyanim. That's a Machlokes Rashi and Tosfos and Avodah Zarah. Was it the year 68? Was it the year 69? Was it the year 70? We'll use the year 70 because it's a round number, easy to remember. We're not taking sides in this Shaila, but if we go back 206 years, the beginning of Malchus Beis Chashmonai, so that takes us to the year of 136 BCE, or 138 BCE. The story of Hanukkah, though, took place long before that. The Gezeres of Antiochus IV, Epiphanes, who ruled, the Gezeres began in the year 167 BCE. That's when he made the Gezeres against keeping Torah, and that's when they were Mechal the Eichel. And they lasted for exactly 3 years. According to the Book of Maccabees, 3 years to the day, Chafei Kislev, the Gezeres began, and Chafei Kislev 3 years later, 164 BCE, is when they ended. So we have the victory of the Hashmonaim in the year 164, and the Malchus, according to the Gemara, will only appear more than 20 years later in the year 136 or 138 BCE. So how do we explain this? The answer is simple. It's true that the Jews defeated the Greeks and they were able to be mevatel the Xeris, and the Greeks, Antiochus died a painful death shortly afterwards, and shortly after the story of Hanukkah, 163 BCE. And then the Greeks realize that these Jews are stubborn and they're rebelling because of we don't let them keep the mitzvahs, and they finally said, okay, we'll bring them out to those gzeiros. You're free to keep your mitzvahs. Then the war against the Greeks turned into an issue of independence from the Greeks. And this was a long process. A lot of factors filled into the process, but the first one to actually be a king was the third brother, was Yonatan. Yehuda Maccabee was not a king. Elazar and Yochanan were killed, and none of them actually died a natural death. The only two who really became king, Yonatan and Shimon. But even they didn't dare declare themselves as king. The word king they didn't use. And in the book of the Maccabees, they're called Nasi. And the reason why they didn't declare themselves king, probably because of this very reason, that they're Kohanim and they're not supposed to be king. So they won't use the word king. Nasi, in the book of the Maccabees, it says, we'll wait until we have Nevuah and decide according to that. But they didn't dare call themselves king. On the coinage, they never minted coins. But the son, Yochanan Harkonus, he minted coins, and he doesn't call himself king either. The only one who dares put the word king on the coin is Alexander Yanai. The Yanai, the one that we mentioned before. Now we have the Gemara. The Gemara tells us, we know the Mishnah in Avos, Al Tamin Ba'atzim Chad Yom Moscha. Shai Yochanan Kohen Godel Shimesh. Kuhuna Gedolah Shimon Mshana, and Basaf Nasi Tzedoki. You have Yochanan Kohen Gadol who served in Kuhuna Gedolah 80 years and then became a Tzedoki. So the Gemara has a discussion, who is this Yochanan Kohen Gadol? Gemara in Brachos Daf, Choftes Amad Aleph. So the Gemara says like this. The discussion, the Gemara is, the story was with Shmuel HaKotan, he was davening for the Yamud, and they named Sidurim like they have today. And when he got to Volamashinim, he got a little confused and lost track of where he was and couldn't continue. And for the covenant of Shmuel HaKotan, the people waited, and they waited for an hour or two, or a time, to see if he can remember what Volamashinim had to say it. And then there was a discussion, why did they let him stay up there when a person does, the Gemara says, if a person does a mistake by any other bracha, we let him stay. But if he makes a bracha by Vola Moshinim, he makes a mistake, then we take him out of there. Because we're choshesh that he might have chas v'shalom become a min, and he doesn't want to say the bracha against the min. So the Gemara says, Shani Shmuel HaKotan. Shmuel HaKotan is different, because he was the one who established Vola Moshinim. Because you know we have Shmona Esrei, 18 brachas, but today we have 19 brachas. Vola Moshinim is the extra bracha. And Shmuel HaKotan, the Gemara says, he was the one who was miyaseh the bracha. So we're not choshesh that he turned around and became a min. So now the Gemara has a whole discussion. Can a person who was originally a tzaddik turn around or not? And it brings this mission of us. Shai Yochanan Kohen Gadol was mishamish 80 years with Kahuna Gedolah. And in the end, he became a tzaddiki. So now the question is, who is this Yochanan Kohen Gadol? So Amar Abaye. So Abaye says, who Yochanan? Abaye says that Yanai, King Yanai, who we just saw in Kiddushin, who killed the Chachamim because he was upset at them that they questioned his lineage for his kashrus of being Kohen Gadol, who Yanai, who Yochanan? This Yochanan over here, now we mentioned, who 80 years was a tzaddik and became, and then became a tzaddiki, that is Yanai. That's Yanai. And Rava says, Yanai l'chut v'Yochanan l'chut. These are two different people. Yanai, Rasha Meikaro. V'Yochanan Tzadik Meikaro. These are two separate people. Yanai was a Rosh Meikaro, and Yochanan was a Tzadik. So the Gemara says, according to Abaye, that Yanai is Yochanan, so this Yochanan Kohen Gadol was a Rosh originally. And then later, after 80 years, it became a Tzaduki, that, okay, so that can happen. But according to Rava, that Yanai is one person, and Yochanan is another person, so we have a proof that Yochanan, who was a Tzadik all his life, became a Tzaduki afterwards. So there's a whole discussion over how these things fit. Historically, I'm not here to take sides, but historically, the Gra says, and I think it fits best with what we know from historical sources. After the five brothers of the Maccabees died, the last one were killed actually was Shimon. He had a son called Yochanan Harkonus. And Yochanan Harkonus has a son known as known scientifically as Alexander Yanai. Now, these names, we call them Yochanan and Hyrcanus, they're actually two different names. Yochanan is his Hebrew name, and Hyrcanus is his Greek name. That's very interesting of how the Maccabees, who were fighting against the Greeks and the Greek culture, eventually all these kings end up with the Greek names versus Jewish names. On the coins of Yochanan and Hyrcanus, so in Hebrew it says Yochanan on one side, and in Greek it says Hyrcanus on the other side. And when it comes to a king by the name of Alexander Yanai, who's known in historical sources, everyone refers to him Alexander Yanai, his name virtually doesn't exist anywhere. His name on the coins, his Greek name is Alexander, and on the coins, his name is Yonatan, and in the Gemara he's called Yanai. So this person, his three people over here, which is actually one, and he's known today historically, they call him Alexander Yanai. He was one of the most powerful Hashmonai kings, and the Gemara says that the issue over here of who this Yochanan Kohen Gadol was it Yochanan Hyrcanus, and Yochanan Hyrcanus was originally a tzaddik, and later became a tzaduki, or, according to Rav, it's two separate people. So Yochanan, So according to Rava, that's the way it was. We're talking about Yochanan Hyrcanus. Is this Yochanan Kohen Gadol? He was 80 years a tzaddik and then became a tzaduki. While Yanai was a Rosh Meikarim. That's according to Rava. But according to Abaye that says Yochanan or Yanai, so then Yochanan is none other than King Yanai. That is historically how the things fit. The big question with this, which we don't have an answer, we don't have an answer to everything, is that none of these people, neither Yochanan Hyrcanus or Yanai, lived for 80 years. So that's a little problem that we have with this, how the Gemara says, Mishamish 80 years, Mekuna Gedayla, when none of these lived for 80 years. Okay, that's a question. As I said, we're not going to resolve all the questions over here. An interesting story with the Hashmonaim is that the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says that 180 years before Churban HaBayis, Parshta Malchus HaRisha Al Yisrael, that 180 years before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, the Malchus HaRisha, the Romans, controlled Eretz Yisrael. The Romans, wait a second, look in any history book, and you'll see that the Romans actually came to Eretz Yisrael in the year 63 BCE, which we're talking about 130-something years before the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. But nothing near the figure of 180, and there's another figure of 206. So the Gemara says that the years of 206 were actually counting from the beginning of the Hashmonai rule. We said that the Hashmonai ruled Malchus Beis Hashmonai 103 years, Malchus Beis Hardus 103 years. So the beginning of Malchus Beis Hashmonai is 206 years before the Churban. That is the beginning of the Roman rule. How does the Hashmonaim become the Roman rule? So the answer is, the Gemara says that the Hashmonaim made a treaty with the Romans. They saw that they can't defeat. The Romans were fighting the Greeks on the western front. And the Hashmonaim were fighting them from the east, and they made a treaty together. Now, we'll both fight the Greeks. Now, this treaty is also documented in the Book of the Maccabees. They had this treaty once, they had this treaty twice, and in the days of Shimon, the third time, this treaty, they made a treaty with the Romans. You think what the Romans, who were very powerful then already, even though they wanted the Roman Empire, what exactly they needed the Hashmonaim for, but evidently, if the Hashmonaim are fighting, then they're pulling the forces to them, and that's making it easier for the Romans. So in essence, what the Gemara says is that it's true that among the days of the Hashmonaim, there actually was some form of independence, but the independence was under the auspices of the Romans. The Romans actually controlled, the Romans were the big force over here, which can explain, in the days of Yochanan Hyrcanus, for example, Antiochus VII came to war against Yochanan Hyrcanus. He laid siege to Shalayim for over a year, and in the end, he came to some treaty with Yochanan Hyrcanus, and he backed off. And his advisors had told him, you know, why don't you just finish him off and that's it? And he didn't want to. And it could be the reason for that is because he was afraid of the Romans. The Romans were more powerful than the Hashmonaim at the time. He was afraid of the Romans, and that's why he didn't want to finish him off. He had his business to take care of. Yochanan Hyrcanus had captured lands which belonged to Antiochus, and that lands means taxes and stuff like that, and for that he went to war against him, but he didn't want to finish him off, and that probably has to do, as I said, with the fact that the Romans they had a treaty with the Romans, and the treaty with the Romans was something that that scared the Greeks. What do we have about the status of the conquest of the Hashmonaim? Is that Eretz Yisrael or not? The Hashmonaim went around. Now, we have the kibush of Yehoshua. When Yehoshua captured Eretz Yisrael, it became Kodesh. It became Kodesh with Truma, Meiser, etc. When the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, then the Kedusha was batel. That Kedusha was batel and no longer had a din of Eretz Yisrael. When they came back in the days of Ezra, so then they did a second Kedusha. And the Rama Paskin says the second Kedusha, Kitcha L'Shaita V'Lasid Lova, the second Kedusha, the second sanctification of Eretz Yisrael is forever. Even after Beis HaMikdash is destroyed, the Kedusha remains. Now the question is, what goes into the definition of Kibush Ezra? Is it just what Ezra captured in the days when he came to Eretz Yisrael? Or, when things expanded over the years, it's also the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael or not? So we have the Gemara in Chulin, Dav Zayin Amud Aleph. The Gemara says that Rebbe was Mate Beit She'an. The city of Beit She'an, which is south of Tiberia, Rebbe was Mater. He had edus from Rabbi Meir. The Rabbi Meir ate vegetables there without taking Meiser, and Rebbe declared that it doesn't have Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. Now there's a whole Shalom that is showing him, does it totally have no Kedusha? Is it Chayv Meiser? That's a whole issue way beyond the scope of what we're here to discuss. But the Gemara says, why didn't Beit She'an have Kedusha? It definitely is part of Eretz Yisrael. So the Gemara says, Habek Rachim Kavshu Molim Mitzrayim. There were a lot of big cities that the older Mitzrayim, meaning in the days of Yeshua, were captured. But the people who came from Babel in the days of Ezra, they didn't capture it. And the Kedusha Rishon Kitcha L'Shaita, so it's true that Beit She'an is territory of Eretz Yisrael, and it's in the list, and the cities appear in Yehoshua. But the Kibush of Yehoshua is irrelevant for the issue of the Kedusha, because we go by the second Kedusha. So, comes along the Yabetz, Habakkuk of Emden, and he asks a question. His question is that in Megillah Sinai, we have a special day of celebration when the Hashmonaim captured Beit She'an. So the Hashmonaim captured Beit She'an, and if the Hashmonaim captured Beit She'an, how could the Gemara of here say that it doesn't have Kedusha when the Hashmonaim captured Beit She'an? That's the question that the Yavetz asks, and he says, maybe the reason is, it's true that the Hashmonaim captured it, but the Hashmonaim are hundreds of years after Ezra, and the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael only applies to what Ezra himself captured, and not what was captured afterwards. So the man, it's true, Hashmonaim captured Beit She'an, but that's irrelevant. We don't look at what the Hashmonaim captured. We look at what was captured before. So that is the opinion, that's what he suggests. And the Tzvus Aretz, Rabbi Yosef Schwartz, in his sefer, he says that clearly that what was not captured in the days of Ezra is not irrelevant. However, don't have to find it right now. Time is short. I'll say it about that. The Rambam talks about the dinim of where Shavuos applies. And, okay, we have it, Baruch Hashem. Rambam, Perek Dalim, Shvita Yov, Laloch, Kuvches, Eber Yadein, Shvius Nahegas Bami Divrayim, Eber Yadin, which is Jordan today, Shmita is Noeg Mi Divrayim, Mi Drabon. And the Rambam goes through a thing that as Shvichim of Eber Yadin grows by itself in Eber Yadin is Mutter, it's no worse than the Arotzos that Oli Bavel didn't capture, which is no issue of Shvichim. If Oli Bavel didn't capture it, then what grows on its own is Mutter to eat. So the Rambam says, Eber Yadin, Kal V'chomet, the Shvichim are not know it. Comes along the Ravid, and the Ravid says, he says, Ma'achach Labim Kal V'chomet, Elok Zikra Oli Bavel. What did the Rambam have to bring in Kal V'chomet, that Shvichim are not know it, in Eber Yadin? He says, the Oli Bavel never captured Eber Yadin. And if they never captured Eber Yadin, so you don't have Kedusha. So why does the Rambam have to make a whole lumdus to explain to me why Eber Yadin doesn't have Kedusha? It's simple. Oli Bavel didn't capture it. Says the Kesef of Mishnah, to answer up to the question of the Ravid, V'yesh Lomai says, the Einam Yodim, Em Kibshu Oli Bavel, K'tas HaRotzos, Me'eber Le'Yadin. who says, where did the Rambam get the idea that Holy Bubba didn't capture Avraham Yarden? Maybe they did. And he quotes the Gemara. Shaya Babai Sheni Melochim Takifim, in the days of Babai Sheni, he had powerful kings. Kamosha Mansina, Biyana Amelech, Shakov Ashishimir, Kadisha Kedushin. He brings the Gemara we mentioned before, that Yana captured 60 villages in Kochla Sheba Midbar. So you see, you had kings who did conquests. So it could be that the Chashmonaim captured Avraham Yarden. That's how the Kesef Mishnah adds up the Ravid. So we see, first of all, today people tend to, not based on the Kesef Mishnah, but when the Gemara Kedushin says that Kochla Sheba Midbar was captured by Yanai, most believe that it is indeed in Avraham Yarden. But all archaeological and historical evidence proves that Jews were settled in Avraham Yarden in those days, in Bayi Sheni. And there's even a place not far from Amman, which is a beautiful, remains of a beautiful, I would say a whole farm, with a massive building over there, a fortress, which has the name Tovia on it, the 20 kilometers west of Amman. So Jews lived in Avraham Yarden, but the Ravid clearly says, the Kesef Mishnah clearly says that the conquest of the Chashmonaim, they give Kedusha. That's clearly from the Kesef Mishnah. He's saying that, you're right, maybe Holy Bubba didn't capture it, but maybe later on the Chashmonaim captured it. So you see, the Ravid definitely holds that if someone that what was captured later has Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. To make a long story very, very short, because we're out on time, there is a famous Braisa that had list the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael, and in the 1970s they actually found, they copied this Braisa written on a mosaic floor of a shul near Beit Shan, and over there has a list of things, and historically, if we try to analyze, it lists the boundaries of Eretz Yisrael from Holy Bavel. It lists Makom Shechziku Holy Bavel, and it clearly includes all the conquests of the Chashmonaim. Areas that we know historically from Josephus that were captured only by Alexander Yanai and later, such as the Trachon, which is an area east of the Golan Heights in Syria today, although it was actually, it belongs to Jews because it was purchased by Baron Rothschild over 100 years ago, it's in Syria today, and that area, the Trachon, appears in this Braisa of Tchumen. So clearly the evidence proves that the conquests of the Chashmonaim also give Kedusha to Eretz Yisrael. We'll finish off by answering our first question. We have all these days from Megillas Tainis. How come the Gemara concludes that only Hanukkah and Purim remain holy days while the rest are butcher? And the answer probably is that all the other days, like for example Yom Nikonor and the day they started building a wall around Yerushalayim, all these things were relevant when Yerushalayim was Eimed Al Tila, when Yerushalayim is standing, so every stage in getting and holding on to Yerushalayim is a Yom Tov. But the moment that Yerushalayim was destroyed, there's no reason for me to celebrate that Amal, they built a wall around Yerushalayim. What do I get from that today? What's relevant for me today? The only things that are relevant from all of Megillas Tainis today is Hanukkah and Purim. And of course, since it's Hanukkah, we'll talk about Hanukkah. Hanukkah, the very existence of the Jewish people was threatened. The Gezeros, the Hellenism, which had already swept through a major portion of the country, a lot of Jews were Hellenized, and if not for these handful of people who got up in Mesiras Nefesh to fight the Chashmonaim, then we wouldn't be here today. The fact that we're here today is all, we're thanking Hashem for the nes that happened over there, that he gave over Rabban Biad Ma'atim, Tzmeim Biad Taharim, etc. So these 2 days, Hanukkah and Purim, they're not relevant just then, they're relevant for us today also, that we are zeichah to be here. So that's why these 2 days remained Yom Tov forever.